Yo, this is P-Town's finest, representing the NEP,
D. Stoudemire,
and y'all know what we're talking about.
No one's ready to deal with us.
Hi, this is Pat Connaughton, and you're listening to the Rip City Report with Casey Holdall, and probably a few pictures of some sneakers, and Joe Freeman.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I'm Joe Freeman, the Oregonian. He's Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Greetings, everybody, from Indianapolis, a road edition of the Rip City Report. First one of the 2017-18 season.
Indeed.
Obviously, Joseph and I are here to cover practice this afternoon and the game on, what day is that?
Friday?
Friday, I guess.
Yeah, we're coming to you from the Courtside Club in the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, the home of your
Courtside Club, yeah.
Indiana Pacers. Well, not your Indiana Pacers, but someone's Indiana Pacers. And so, do the Blazers go 82-0? Do they become
think
the best defensive team in the NBA?
I think both those are probably the most reasonable takeaways from the opener versus the Suns. Just an absolute drubbing of the Phoenix Suns, a team that, you know, no one expected to be great this year, but I think people expected them to be a little better than they were last night, though. I mean, a lot of that was Portland Trail Blazers. You don't want to take anything away from them, but that's a great way for Portland to start the season, particularly after talking about, you know, defense as much as they did during training camp, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit here. And, you know, not so great of a time for the Suns, but, you know, we won't worry about them so much.
I feel like the Phoenix Suns right now.
I mean, you look wonderful, Joe.
I don't feel like I look wonderful.
For those of you out there, you might not realize this, but, I mean, Joe was up at the break of dawn to get to his flight today after staying up
Nobody cares.
To finish the stories last night. So Joe probably working on 2 or 3 hours of sleep right now.
I'm not in mid-season.
But that's not going to stop him from doing the podcast is what I'm trying to get to here.
That's
nothing's going to stop Joe Freeman from delivering this audio goodness to the fans out there.
I'm wearing sweats. I feel like the Phoenix Suns, and I'm not in mid-season shape. I need to get it together.
Yeah.
I need to dig deep. I need to figure out. I need to get my stride.
Yeah, you got to get that road rhythm down. You're
totally
right. And yeah, we're all. I mean, I traveled a little bit for the preseason, so that I feel that helped me a little bit. But yeah, you gotta get the feel of the season. And yeah, those first couple trips, you know, you're flying in a lot of planes. You're like, your joints start to hurt a little bit. You got to kind of remember how to sleep on the road again because that can be difficult in hotels. So, you know, these are things that people don't care about, and we're not complaining about them. But, you know, it is the reality of covering an NBA team on the road.
Do you think the solution to it all is more cocktails on the plane or fewer cocktails on the plane?
I think, you know, I would at least start with more.
Yeah.
And see how that goes.
Okay.
And, you know, and then maybe dial it back.
That's a good
plan.
And
then wait for a while before you decide maybe fewer cocktails on the plane.
Okay.
So,
done.
And, I think, too, like morning, noon, night, it was never a bad time to drink on a plane.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah. We're actually technically not allowed to drink on the Trailblazer plane.
So you wouldn't know anything about that.
I do not. But for those of you who do enjoy a cocktail on the plane, yeah, you know, it makes the time go by, and yeah, maybe helps you relax a little bit. I've lost my ability to sleep on planes for some reason. When I first started working for the team, I could zonk out on the plane, no problem. Now it's like, I don't even bother trying anymore.
Well, we're bringing to you a very, I wouldn't say haphazard, but usually we have a little preparation, we do a little game planning, we've got some, at least the semblance of a show laid out for you, but we're really flying by the seat of our pants today. We wanted to bring you an immediate podcast after the season opener, and what a season opener it was. We'll get into that and more, including your questions, shortly. Before I do, as always, please follow us on Twitter. You can follow Casey at Seahold, C-H-O-L-D. You can follow me at Blazer Freeman. Please check out Casey's fine content at blazers.com/forwardcenter. And please check out mine and my colleagues' content at oregonlive.com/blazers. And as always, please review the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on YouTube, wherever you do download this. We'd love to know what you think. We love all your 5-star reviews, which we are, as I mentioned last podcast, back to a 5-star review status on iTunes. So thank you very much.
Yeah, if I had some kind of sound effect that was balloons popping or something, that would be that. Thank you for all your reviews. As I always say, you don't have to give us a 5-star review, but it'd be nice if you did.
So, yeah, for sure.
But just be honest too. And since I always mention to people to be honest, that leads you to believe they are being honest, and people really do think we're a 5-star podcast. So thank you, everybody out there. It's
Indeed.
Very kind.
Okay, so the Blazers open the season in ridiculously impressive fashion Wednesday night, beating the Phoenix Suns 124-76. A couple of impressive statistics on that win. Largest margin of victory on opening night in NBA history. Largest margin of defeat for the Suns in franchise history. Interestingly enough, played 50 years to the day since their very first game as a franchise. And it was tied for the second largest win in Blazers history, falling just short of a 50-point drubbing they gave the Cleveland Cavaliers in 1982. And they came a three-pointer at the buzzer by Portland native Mike James short of setting that record.
They did, which, you know, congrats, Mike James. He's been playing well for them,
yeah.
At least in preseason when we saw him in Portland. It would have been nice to get that record for their largest margin of victory ever. Having a large margin of victory of an opening night game in the NBA history, anytime you can throw an NBA history into a statistic, it's pretty good news, especially for a team like the Trail Blazers, who, as everyone knows out there, not considered a stalwart defensive team, really going out and kind of showing that they're serious about being a better defensive team this year. Now, granted, again, it's one game. We're probably going to say it's one game 20 times in this podcast. But, you know, that's the one game we have to go off right now, and they looked really good.
Interesting note about Mike James. He went to Portland's own Grand High School. That will be the high school that my daughter Finley and my unborn child go to well after I win the $100 bet with Casey of not moving to the suburbs.
Unless they're going to build a Grant High School in Hillsboro or Beaverton or Gresham.
Someone on Twitter threw out Vancouver. That's
besides,
also an option, too.
Even if you did stay there, with how often Portland Public Schools changes which schools you're going to, even in 15 years, there is no humanly possible way that kids who live in your neighborhood are going to Grant High School. They'll be going to some school in the middle of the Columbia Slough or something like that. They ain't going to Grant, is what I'm saying.
So, okay.
And well, I'm going to win that bet regardless.
We agree to disagree. A couple of quick notes before we press on. Zach Collins, a rookie forward, missed the opener with gastroenteritis, but he has been upgraded to probable for the Pacers. Another player who will turn and be available against the Pacers, CJ McCollum, after his one-game absence. He will return to make his season debut. And a little bit of breaking news right now on this Thursday afternoon, the Blazers have signed Wade Baldwin to a two-way contract. Wade Baldwin is in his second year in the NBA. He was the number 17 overall pick by the Memphis Grizzlies in last season's draft. Played 33 games as a rookie with bit averages, 3.2 points, less than 2 assists. 12 minutes a game, played a lot in the D League. Basically, sort of an opportunity, and I'll be blatantly clear, I don't know much about him at all, but it's an opportunity for the Blazers to take a flyer on a young player who was thought highly enough to be a first-round pick only a year ago. So for anyone asking why Wade Baldwin, why now, he was recently waived. Chance for the Blazers to pick up a player that they could have their rights and develop. So
yeah, it's one of those moves where, you know, yeah, I'm right there with you, Joe. Like, I couldn't pick Wade Baldwin out of a lineup, but you know, the fact that he did get cut after just one season, after only playing 33 games, obviously the Grizzlies didn't see enough to keep him around, and they were in a bit of a crunch as well in terms of signing guards. They ended up going with Mario Chalmers, returning from, I believe, his ACL injury over Baldwin, which again, you know, probably not. I mean, it doesn't say it's not great for either party. It's obviously not great for Baldwin getting cut. It's you could argue it's worse for the Grizzlies cutting a guy who they used the number 17th pick on the year before. That's, you know, basically burning an asset there, which I'm sure they don't feel great about. But yeah, it gives him a chance, or it gives the Trailblazers a chance to kick the tires and see if there's anything there. And if not, you know, they move on just like the Grizzlies did, but at a much less price. So, you know, it makes sense. We'll probably learn more about Wade Baldwin here over the next couple of days, I would suppose.
Also, a quick Yusuf Nurkic three-pointer update. If we had some type of sound effects or some type of lead-in,
yeah,
we would cue that in right now. He attempted one three-pointer last night. That puts Casey
right
in
on
firm
schedule.
Control to not only win the 50 attempt threshold, but the 80 attempt threshold. Now, the 50 attempt threshold is the original bet, which someone on Twitter accurately corrected us for. The 80 attempt threshold comes with a lunch, so the winner of that will graciously accept a free lunch from the other. So you're on pace to win both of those bets right now.
Yeah, like I said, I feel good. I mean, if nothing else, we might not ever get a sound effect for it, but I'm definitely going to look at Joe every single time that Nurkic shoots a three-pointer this season just to make the visual acknowledgement that it's coming. So he didn't hit it, though, so I guess, you know.
The bet's not on me.
Well, I know, but on one hand, you know, I'm going to enjoy that lunch, but part of me, you know, I don't want to necessarily celebrate it. If Yusuf goes 0-82, you know, I'm glad I won the bet, but...
Lunch is lunch.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Which, by the way, my wife and I went to a place that the two of us went earlier. I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to put them on blast. And it was good, but man, their prices are ridiculous now at the
what
place.
What type of food?
With the chicken.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Like, I mean, we got two dishes, neither was very big, and it was like $50.
Did they raise their prices?
I think they might have.
Oh.
The smaller thing that we got, I'm being cryptic on purpose here, was, I mean, it was good, but like it was not enough of a meal for a kid.
That's
let alone an adult. So yeah. So you know they'll have to. They're not on the list yet, but they're inching towards.
They're inching
the
towards
list.
It. Yeah. So where should we start here? So much to digest yesterday. You know where I'll start before we talk about any of this. Before we heap loads of praise on the Blazers, which is justifiable after a ridiculous game in which they won by 48 points, led by 58 at one point, and were pretty much dominant from beginning to end in almost every aspect. This was one game. It was a season opener. It came against the Phoenix Suns. Definitely a top five, low five team in the NBA.
Absolutely.
If not one of the worst. I guess low five is one of the worst. So there you go for that. So all of this comes with a huge grain of salt, but one game, body of work, that's our sample size, that's what we have to go off of. So many stories to go to. I think the obvious one to start off with, Pat Connaughton.
Pat,
incredible
absolutely.
Debut. You know, the big question, how do you replace Allen Crabbe? Can Pat deliver in that role? Can Pat prove that he belongs in the NBA? So many storylines surrounding him, and he emphatically, through one game, has answered all of them.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and, you know, 3 months ago, there was a question if Pat was going to be in the league still.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously the Blazers had that team option. They even pushed back the deadline on that team option to give themselves either more time to decide or probably, one would assume, to maybe include Pat in a trade. And obviously that didn't happen. They did decide to pick up the option, even though... You know, that money is added to their luxury tax bill right now. So basically what I'm trying to get to is that if the Blazers didn't think that Pat would be able to give them something this year, they would have cut him. And they were probably fairly close to cutting him because to get below that luxury tax line is important. Now, granted, I think you have to carry 14 players, so they would have had to bring someone in. But long story short, after his first two seasons and after another summer league, which Pat didn't look all that good in it.
And he hasn't looked good in any summer.
And he hasn't, exactly. So for him to go from there a few months ago to really showing out in the opener, hitting, I think, his first five shots, going 2-of-2 from three in the first quarter, really, one, a great development for the Trailblazers if he's able to play anywhere close to that for the season. And two, it's really good for Pat, you know, and I think that those of us who know Pat know he's a really good guy. Mm-hmm. He's kind, he's smart, he treats us with respect, and you want to see guys like that do well. And I think so far, I mean, obviously through that one game, he absolutely has looked great.
Yeah, and my takeaway from that, it's not just that, you know, he scored 24 points, had a good outing. When you look up and down the Blazers roster, pretty much everyone did something. But he did it when it mattered.
Yeah.
He came in earlier than expected with the Blazers down two starters. In foul trouble because Maurice Harkless picked up two less than 3 minutes into the game. And so he was needed at that point.
Hey, it's our old friend,
hey,
Chad
Buchanan. Hi, Chad.
The man responsible for Damian Lillard being in Portland, now assistant general manager here. Is he assistant general manager to Kevin Pritchard?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he was general manager or president of basketball
operations.
He's assistant
general manager.
Long story short, number two in
who the heck was that tapping on the glass?
And you want to talk about good guys, Chad Buchanan, right up there, one of the best.
One of my all-time favorites in the NBA.
A great fellow.
As genuine as they've come.
Even if he is interrupting the podcast here. It's a cardinal sin, but
well, when you're bringing
it is his building, I suppose.
When you're bringing a podcast from the light-bound courtside club in the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, how many ads can we get in here that aren't even our ads? you have to expect an interruption from time to two.
That's true.
Yeah, but what I was going to say, the point I was trying to make about with Pat was that it came when the Blazers needed it, when they were about, you know, down two starters, kind of on the ropes, because when you look at the score, the final score of the game, it was lopsided, but it was a nip and tuck first seven, 8 minutes.
Yeah. It looked like it might have been another one of those games where it's like, oh boy,
scuffling.
These guys
are
not ready.
So his, you know, he came in, immediately scored 7 points, and then the Blazers kind of got on a roll from there, and he sort of, I wouldn't say he started that charge, but he was an important piece of that charge. So one game, we'll see where this goes. But, you know, not only did he help fill the void left by McCollum's suspension, but he also, I think, showed what he showed during the exhibition season. I don't think, and I think this was a Walton or Odin last episode maybe. I don't remember. Blazers aren't going to miss Allen Crabbe, I think. And I think this is a evidence towards showing that.
Yeah, and I mean, exactly. Like, you, I guess really the totality of that game too is like you saw everything you wanted to see from the Trailblazers in that game, from Pat playing well to the defense. Mm-hmm. I thought Mo Harkless, Alfred Kaminu were great. I thought Ed Davis looked healthy and fantastic.
Evan Turner all over the place.
Awesome. Damian was, you know, typical Damian. And for me, you know, we can say it's the Suns. And granted, you know, the Suns are not a great team. But that was another thing the Blazers had trouble with last year. The Blazers have been a team that 2 years ago, they got all of their games against teams that they should beat. Last year, they dropped games that would make you absolutely scratch your head and be like, how could they lose to these
They
guys?
Did go 3-1 against the Suns, though.
That's true. The Suns were one of those teams. But the Suns have been a team that they've struggled
yeah,
with
2 years ago,
at times
yeah.
as well. So for them to come out and, you know, on if there's any night that the Phoenix Suns are going to beat you, it's probably going to be opening night of their 50th season at home. And to go in and just beat the pants off of them, or the elastic shorts, I guess. I think that, you know, that says something about the team. It doesn't mean that they're going to be a fantastic team this year, but it says that they are making the progress that they've been talking about making during training camp.
Do you imagine opening a season losing by 48?
No. That's
like
rough.
Where do you? I mean, there's nowhere to go from up but there. But man, that practice, that get together, that next day. Whew, that's got to be rough.
Well, Earl Watson, he was talking to some of our assistant coaches when we were leaving the hotel this morning, and he must maybe stay downtown or something. Maybe
he lives downtown.
He was walking to the arena, and you know, he didn't look particularly happy.
No.
So I can imagine that today's practice in Phoenix will.
It was pretty rough.
It was pretty rough. Yeah, and the other thing you mentioned it too, just the 50th anniversary. It's like, yeah, if the Blazers had won by 50,
ugh,
and everyone in that building is wearing shirts with a crest that has 50 on it, like, that would have been
whoops,
the hugest self-own in the history of cell phones. I guess it wouldn't necessarily be a self-own because the Blazers are the ones that put 50 on them,
yeah,
but they're the ones with the, I mean, long story short, you don't assume you're going to lose by 50, but
it got so bad there at the end. By the way, tough game for Collins to miss because he would have got some serious run
yeah,
last night.
Absolutely.
It got so bad at the end that I noticed Shabazz Napier was sort of like calling off the dogs himself, like dribbling around aimlessly, not facilitating and not attacking with like 5 minutes
yeah,
or 6 minutes
that's
left.
The thing.
He was like, he didn't know what to do. And at one point, the assistant coach Dave Vanderpool had to say, keep playing, go hard, you know? And it's just like one of those nights where you're like, how bad do you embarrass, you know, your peers?
Yeah. For me, when I watched that game, you could tell that the Suns were like, hey, let's get our percentages up a little bit here. Let's try to make this at least look a little bit respectable. I think, I don't know what they shot in the fourth quarter, but they were shooting 29% going into the fourth quarter, and I think they finished the game at 32%, which means that they obviously shot a much better percent than they did throughout the game. But, you know, I think one of their second-to-last offensive possession, I think they tried to throw an alley-oop.
They did.
And I was like, at that point, if I'm the Blazers, I'm like, hey, someone throw a lob for me right here, because if you guys are going to keep playing, we should keep playing. But, yeah, I mean, like, it was one of those games where, yeah, you don't usually get an NBA game where 5 minutes, it's like you were literally, like, running out the clock, you know, and I mean, in some respects too, maybe you don't want to show anything at that point. I mean, I don't know how deep scouts are getting into fourth quarter tape of a blowout. But yeah, I know it's the same thing, Joe. The Suns looked like they didn't want to be there. I would guess probably about
midway through the
third
quarter.
Yeah. Well, third quarter they came out, and I think Earl called a time. I think Blazers might have scored like 7 or 9 straight to start the third quarter. Earl called a timeout within like the first minute, And you could tell from there that it was like this, they're done. Like, they're not going to be out there. So I was surprised, too. I mean, I know he looks like maybe he might have dinged himself up a little bit, but I thought at least Devin Booker would go out and try to get shot. But the Blazers were just eating everything up, you know? Like, and that really the biggest takeaway from that game is just the way they play defense. And again, if they're able to play anything close to that against some of the better competition in the league, I mean, I know I scoffed at the notion of this team being a top 10 defense, but I mean, heck.
Well, based off the preseason, like based off one regular season game, they've done nothing to they've done nothing but reinforce their own, you know, mantra of getting better at defense, being alert and trying. I mean, that's what you've seen. And again, huge caveat, Suns one game, but that was quite an impressive defensive performance just from a strict effort and tenacity standpoint, and an intelligent standpoint. I really noticed them sticking to the game plan. I thought they really followed tendencies and scouting reports well, and they just seemed connected, and that's sort of what you heard a lot from them based on, you know, how they played in the exhibition season, is they just really, really felt connected. And we glossed over it, but Mo Harkless was so good on defense last night. At two different times, he had assistant coaches go nuts. One, Dale Osborne pounded on his chest and screamed in his ear. He had such a good pin in the corner and denied what was his name?
Josh Jackson
yeah. so emphatically. And then he got Jackson on a vicious block at the and it caused Dave Vanterpool to put his hands in prayer and bow, you know, give him the old nod down.
It was, I missed that. But I saw Dale Osborne just going full on spastic when Mo got that block. Yeah, and that, I think Josh Jackson had a really good game against the Blazers.
He looks pretty good.
Preseason. I mean, yeah. He's going to be a nice little player. But Mo wasn't having any of that. Mo also, I can't remember exactly what the play was, but it was the Suns were shooting at the rim in front of their bench, mm-hmm. and Mo made some kind of defensive play, and when he was walking back up the court, it wasn't a block, he only had one block, it might have been a steal. Basically, he like patted the guy on the ass as they're walking back up the court. He's like, "Hey, it's okay, kid.
It's going to be okay, little buddy.
You'll get him next time.
Might as well pat him on the head."
And like, basically, it's what okay, it was, buddy. You know. And it was one of the. I remember seeing it and being like, "Oh man, Mo, that's so cold, my guy."
All of that notwithstanding, my favorite line of the night last night was when Damian Lillard referred to Pat as Pat McCollum.
Pat McCollum, yeah.
That's a standard that might replace Patty Fastball as a permanent.
It should, and that's the thing. I mean, if I kind of feel like we should move away from Patty Fastball anyways, because it's like, hey, if this guy's here and he's showing he wants to be a ball player, a basketball player, he even referenced, you know, like a lot of people think I should be, you know, pitching right now, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is what I want to do, then I think we should respect that a little bit.
Well, what are we going to call him? Patty Handles? Patty Three-Pointer?
Oh, yeah, Patty...
Patty Dribbles?
Patty Dribbles is okay.
You know what? Let's put it up to the listeners.
Yeah, we'll leave it to people. If you've got a good idea for a new Pat Connaughton nickname... Go ahead and send it into the Rip City Report. Send the old at reply to myself or Joe, or even to Pat at Planet
sure.
Pat 5.
Yeah,
and maybe we'll get work on a new one for Pat.
I feel like he would probably say something like, you know, it's got to be organic.
Yeah,
it's got to just kind of come naturally.
Well, those are always the best nicknames, as we talked about, I believe, on the season preview of the Rip City
right.
Report. When we talked about nicknames, that the best nicknames are always the ones that are they come about because they make sense and it's a it comes by its own momentum,
sure,
if you will. So yeah. So if you got a good idea, send it in.
Well, I know we were going to do a little bit of an abridged podcast here because it's just one game and we don't want to talk about it for an hour. Should we move on to questions? Is there anything else?
Yeah, no. I think let's do the questions because yeah, we'll get into a deeper kind of digest of the first week of the season next week's
okay.
podcast. But yeah, let's keep it in the moment. Let's get to the questions
real quick before we do that. I will say there is one player who has flown under the radar more than any other off the first game, and then we'll move on to questions.
Okay,
would you want to guess who I think that player is?
Ed Davis.
He would be a close second.
Okay.
Shabazz Napier.
Oh, yeah. Shabazz, definitely. Shabazz is great, too. And that actually, you're right. We should talk about that real quick, because talk about Pat coming in and hitting some shots and make a difference. Shabazz did the exact same thing. Shabazz came in, I think hit his two first shots. I think they might have both been three-pointers. And again, like, they were having some foul troubles. I believe Evan Turner had two fouls at that point. They were playing a lineup, I think, of Damian, Shabazz, and Pat.
Yes.
Which, I mean, first even time a small ever? Ball lineup, that's a small ball lineup.
First time ever?
It might have been. Which, by the way, the starters last night, too, was also the first time those guys had ever played together as well. I mean, obviously, Nurkic only playing 20 games, and Evan having his hand broken, kind of some overlap there. But yeah, they had never played that lineup either. So
Shabazz's numbers, 10 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, only 1 turnover. He went 4 for 6 from the field, 2 for 2 from deep in not quite 23 minutes. So for a guy who missed the entire exhibition season with that hamstring injury, to come back and have that type of performance really kind of gives you a little insight into why Neil Olshey had touted his offseason going way back to Media Day. So he's a guy who's kind of flown under the radar. And it will be interesting to see. Pat was so good. Shabazz was so, had such an impact. How does Terry go tomorrow against the Pacers? Because, you know, he's a guy who doesn't like to go more than 9. He can go 10 in a rotation, but he won't go beyond that. So how does he use those guys, and how do you match up with a Pacers team that sounds like they're play pretty fast, they're pretty deep, kind of a lot of quote-unquote no names, if you will, and would they score 140
something, goodness, 45, gracious. 43? Yeah, I mean, that's buckets, so... Yeah, that, you know, the Blazers, I don't know that we're to the point where there's a concern about how we're going to get all these guys playing time just yet, but yeah, you know, with C.J. McCollum coming back, Evan Turner goes to the bench, that you would assume kind of pushes everyone back. I'm guessing that, you know, maybe Shabazz gets some of the first unit or some of the backup point guard duties right off the jump. Maybe they don't go to CJ as the primary ball handler at that point. We saw in the game last night, Evan handled the ball a lot when he was with Damian, even to start the game. I think I even heard Damian mention in the locker room last night something to the effect of teasing Evan for calling plays that make Damian run around more than he typically has to. He's like, man, you're calling all these plays, I'm tired, and you're making me run around screens and this and that. And he's like, I should be calling the plays, because at least that way you're the one that has to run around. So those are the kind of jokes you can make when you beat a team by almost 50 points, I suppose.
Okay, let's get to your guys' questions. Usually we try to at least copy and paste them into a file, so we're a little organized. But again, we're sort of trying to bring this to you off the seat of our pants. Casey mentioned how I woke up early this morning to get in. Well, Casey flew in a little later, but he, first thing, didn't even unpack, got straight here to the arena to record. So we are just trying to bring you this as quickly as we can. So nice job on your part, Casey.
Thank you. A lot of media attention for today's today's recording as well. We got Brooke posting photos. We got Code Red posting photos.
Yeah.
You guys are really getting an inside look into how the podcast sausage gets made here on the road.
Well, usually we're confined to a corner studio in the bowels of the Moda Center, but here we are in this lush courtside club surrounded by what are that? Glass
walls. Lights. I guess those aren't fluorescents. They're whatever those. Well, no, they
fancy
are,
lights.
Well,
yeah,
yeah. They're the ones that look like they're old timey
incandescent
lights.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
Yeah. So there you go.
So you digress. So I'm just going to go ahead and try to check these off in order, and we'll get to as many as we can before we need to wrap it up. First up, our good friend Mike Acker wants to know: should the Blazers expect to win every game by 48?
I mean, I think that's the most reasonable expectation at this point. I mean, why limit yourself?
Speaking of ridiculous expectations, Evan Turner, who spent October, November, December, and much of January last year as the NBA's worst player, for a lack of a better term, in plus-minus, recorded a plus 43 last year.
Yeah,
so talk about a transformation. After one game. Anyway, that's interesting to me. Next up from Matthew Weir, does Damian Lillard sleep on his front, back, or his side?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Tweet at him.
Yeah, ask Damian. I don't want to ask him about his sleeping habits.
That's getting weird.
A little weird, yeah.
Next up from Brian, if they both were paid the same exact salary, who would get more playing time, Pat or Evan Turner?
It would still be Evan. I know that people feel like Evan's overpaid and that he's maybe not the player they wanted to see Portland go out and get in free agency. But he's not a bad player. I mean, I'm not saying Pat is a bad player, but Evan Turner is a useful NBA player. And, I mean, there's things that he does, particularly on defense, that any team could use. So, I mean, again, I know that E.T. might not be the guy that everyone wants him to be, but he's still better than I think he gets credit for.
Yeah, and listen, guys, he played 25 minutes last night, made 4 of his 8 shots, and listen to this stat line. 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, a block, a couple turnovers, plus 43. If you get that type of performance from Evan Turner every night, you're going to be just fine. It's not going to matter that he's making $70 million or whatever it is. At some point, if the team succeeds, it doesn't matter how much money they make in the grand scheme of things. So, but that's, you know, that's the thing when you sign a contract, though. That's, you're never going to not have that attached to you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Yusuf Nurkic makes less than Ed Davis or Myers Leonard, and he's starting in front of those guys.
Now, easy. You just brought up Myers Leonard in his contract. Now there's going to be...
Well, I'm just saying that the notion that... I mean, money is important in the NBA. Don't get me wrong. It absolutely is. But I don't think Terry's making his rotation decisions based off of what Hoops Hype says a guy is making.
Correct. Next up, from Zach Silva, it's one game in, so we have a small sample size against a bad team, but can the Blazers' defense be, gulps, looks around wearily, decent to average?
Yes, yeah. I believe they can, and I think both Joe and I, when we did our season preview earlier this week, I'm not expecting the Blazers to be a top 10 defense, but I think they can be an average defense. And so if they're at 15... I think that they're in pretty good shape. If they can be middle of the pack in defensive efficiency, not foul as much as they did last year, which has been an issue. The Blazers, you know, they've got the willingness to be a better defensive team, but when you foul to beat the band, I mean, you can't really play the way you want to play. So if they're able to kind of get that in check, they can be an average defensive team, absolutely.
Yusuf Nurkic for a whole season. Healthy Al-Farouq Aminu, who missed 21 games last season. Those two players alone make your defense better. And based upon what we saw last night with Turner and Harkless and Aminu and how versatile those three players can be, I think decent to average is a basement expectation. Next up, for Mid City Revival, what's your guys' all-time favorite ice cream?
Ooh.
You know, I'm more of a mood guy. I'm not going to throw out a favorite, you know? Sometimes I want a mint chocolate chip. Sometimes I want a rocky road. Maybe sometimes I just want your standard chocolate, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm a big salted caramel guy.
Yeah,
that's probably my go-to on most occasions. Nice chocolate chip, anything with crazy chocolate and fudge and weird things in there I'll go for. Totally up to my mood at that moment.
I agree. I for the most part, I like a wide range of ice creams. I also like mint chocolate chip. I like anything with caramel and...
Caramel, butterscotch?
Well, I don't like butterscotch, actually. Mm. Butterscotch is one of those things I don't like. But
weird.
If I was going to pick my favorite, probably Haagen-Dazs Dulce de Leche.
Oh,
which
quality.
It's kind of like there's ribbons of caramel
sure.
through it, and it's got a nice consistency. When my first year, after my freshman year of college, I moved back home to work, and I was merchandising for a local beverage distribution company, and I was working just ridiculous hours.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, my meal in the day, I would get a pint of Dulce de Leche Haagen-Dazs, and I would eat that at like 11 o'clock at night and then go to bed and wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go back to work. So
gross.
Yeah, no, not great. An unhealthy lifestyle.
Oh, to be 20 again.
No, I don't miss it. Those people that, like, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm 37, so I'm guessing at some point in my life I'll look back and reminisce about being younger, but like, I've never once wanted to be like, oh man, when I was 18, things were awesome. I wish I could go back to
that. Wait. That's not what I'm implying. Well, merely mean that you can get away with eating ice cream and going
yes,
to bed and waking
yeah,
up. You
yeah,
can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, you're I mean, too old for that.
I'm also not one of those people that stops myself from doing that kind of stuff, though. I mean, you're right. I shouldn't be doing it. And, I mean, I think if you see some of the photos of me over the years, you can tell that I really shouldn't be doing it. But, you know, I tend not to live myself that way, Joe.
Life. All right, sounds good.
Just next for a up, shorter life than everyone else's.
Next up from Ryan Lau. Ryan Lau has multiple questions here. They're quite random, but he's a loyal listener. He's been listening from very early in the podcast, so we're going to give him his due. 82-0? No.
Yes.
No. Best defense in the league?
No.
Agreed. Pat, sixth man? I assume he means sixth man of the year.
No.
No. Dame MVP? Trade CJ for luxury tax relief? Talk all in depth, please.
Yes, yes. Okay.
All right. Next up from Ryan Green. Wait, that's actually not a question. That's just a reply to... Sorry. Again, I'm going through these for lack of looking. So, next up from Rick Green. Casey, taking my son Zach to an away Blazer game, and I'm wondering if you two could tell me, if you're doing it, what team would you go see?
Now, I mean, I think we've answered questions like this in the past, and for me it always comes down to, like, what are you looking for out of this event? Like, do you just want to see the best game? Do you want to see a team with the best players?
Do you want to go to a city that's desirable?
Yeah, do you want to go to a nice city? Do you want to go to somewhere where the in-arena experience is fantastic? That kind of defines it. So, I mean, on one hand, any chance to see, I feel like, you know, any chance to see LeBron, an all-time player, Cleveland... It's not great to work there, but no. I think they do, as far as like fan experience, I think it's pretty good. The city itself, Cleveland, pass. But I mean, so for me, Cleveland's kind of fun. I think games in Boston are great. And obviously, if Gordon Haywood's ankle hadn't exploded, that would be an even better reason to go. But still a pretty good team. I think their in-arena is some of the best in the league. Boston is a wonderful town to visit.
You know, I'm thinking if he's taking his son, he doesn't want to fly across country.
That's probably
so. I'm going to pick a couple. I'm going to say Oakland, quick flight, multiple airports, San Jose, multiple in San Francisco, Oakland.
You're going to pay out the gazillion tickets. You could fly round trip across the country and pay less than you would for Warriors tickets.
Yeah, but that notwithstanding, you'll get to see one of the best teams in NBA history.
Absolutely.
Great watching, viewing environment, good atmosphere. I'd put them on the list. And I'm going to throw out a random one here. A much more easier ticket, much more easier place to navigate. Denver. Quick flight.
Yeah.
Good city. Lots to do. Fun city. Easy to get around with a child. And a quick flight. So I'm going to throw out those two as options.
There you go.
Okay, let's see. Next up from Chapin Peterson. Can Pat and CJ play together, or will Pat play exclusively with Dame?
No, they can play together, for sure. I imagine they probably will play together from time to time. CJ is the primary ball handler in that situation, but yeah, totally.
He does get at something that's interesting, though, because when you think about pairings, you know, you've got Shabazz Napier to consider. Maybe Baz plays with CJ. And Pat plays with Dame.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're thinking about how to match him up, I think I feel like I did some notes on this once, and I had how this worked, but I'm probably not going to be able to find it now. So, I'm not. But anyway, I think you at least want to experiment trying them both. So, next up from Billy Lynn. We've got some multiple questions here. Where was CJ watching the game? He was watching it from his hotel room on his laptop. Turns out Phoenix didn't have the game broadcast locally, at least not in his hotel, so he watched it on his laptop.
Didn't even watch the entire game either, actually, too.
He said about 2.5 quarters.
Yeah. He saw what he needed to see.
Saw enough. And Joe, why did you move to Oregon? Well, Billy, I moved to Oregon to go to college. I went to the University of Portland. First time I ever stepped foot in Portland was when I stepped foot off the plane to come to college. And Casey, do you hate cats?
No, I like cats a great deal. I like all animals, really, for the most part.
Raccoons? Squirrels?
I don't mind raccoons or squirrels. I mean, I don't hate them. I don't want them in my house, necessarily, but...
Rats?
No, I'm not going to shoot them or anything. I don't care for rats much. I did have a pet rat as a kid.
Weirdo.
Named Noodles. It was albino. Rats are good pets. They're incredibly intelligent. I like rats as long as they don't try to live in my house without my permission. And at that point, just like any other animal, humans included... you're going to get dealt with extreme prejudice.
Next up from Bojangles, is last night's game any indication of how well our bench will produce, or was that a fluke? Man, I don't know. It's one game against the Suns.
I wouldn't expect, Pat's not going to score 24 points a game, or even half that probably. Shabazz isn't probably going to come in and hit his first three or four shots every single game. But you got Evan Turner, who's going to go back to the bench, I'm assuming, and you know, that gives you a little bit of pop. So yeah, no, I think their bench over the years has improved marginally. You know, they're not going to get that kind of production from the bench night in, night out, though. I mean, when you start talking about Evan Turner and Ed Davis and Pat and Shabazz and, you know, in theory, Al-Farouq when Noah Vonleh comes back, or Noah Vonleh.
Swanigan
as well. Yeah, I mean, they've got more options, at least offensively. Again, I don't think the bench is their strongest unit necessarily, but, I mean, they're better than they have been before.
Next up from Jared Machow. Casey, you did great commentating last night.
Hey,
Casey,
thanks.
Casey was on the radio last night. What are your favorite commentators across any sport?
Oh, boy. You know, I don't know. I like Doris Burke. I mean, she does play-by-play, but I think she's great. I don't like the more bombastic announcers. I like the guys that are kind of a little more subdued. Wheels, obviously, being the exception. Though I wouldn't call Wheels bombastic. He's just enthusiastic. I'd have to give that a little bit more thought, actually.
Mike Breen's really good for talking about.
Breen is awesome. That's a real good point. Mike Breen is a hell of a nice guy, too. Which is great, because a lot of people you meet in media tend to kind of think a lot of themselves. Mike Breen carries himself like a regular dude. So
I like Kurt Herbstreit for college football. I'm a big fan of his. I really like the Sunday night NFL team of Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Chris Collinsworth is very good. You're not a big NFL guy.
Yeah.
He is incredibly... he knows his stuff. I remember watching him when I was a kid on the old Inside the NFL on HBO, and he's always been very good at his job. And Al Michaels is Hall of Fame broadcaster. Some may feel like he's worn out his welcome, but he's a legend in his own field. So
yeah. He said something on the last broadcast, right, that really pissed people off.
I don't know. Maybe.
I saw some mention of it, and people were like, damn you. Though, I mean... the way it is these days, you know, if it was something that pissed off a lot of people, it probably also made a lot of people happy, so...
Next up from Dan Zeal. It's still early to overreact, but can we assume Myers is on the outside looking in for playing time? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You can assume that for sure.
That is a safe assumption at this point.
Okay, next up from David Cox.
Which, by the way, too, no one on this podcast ever gave you the impression otherwise.
That's true. That is very true.
That's why you listen to the Rip City Report.
Indeed.
Straight dope.
Next up from David Cox. Can you talk on the Baldwins? Oh, sorry, David. We already talked about Baldwin. Jose Escutia wants to know, when is the Blazers championship parade?
2 days after they win the championship. There'll probably be a riot immediately following.
Next up from Amanda Judkins. Have you guys heard of NBA Catwatch?
I have, yeah.
We need help figuring out which Trailblazers have cats.
I don't think any of them do. There's not many pets on this team as it is, actually. I do not believe there is a single cat owner on the Portland Trailblazers.
You know what's funny is that cats are way easier to own than dogs.
Oh,
and there are dog owners.
Are there any guys that have dogs in this team?
No, Myers.
Myers does. Obviously, he's got the two huskies. Shabazz has a bulldog that's pretty cute. Dame doesn't have any pets. CJ doesn't have any pets. CJ's girlfriend has a little mini Yorkie, but it ain't his. Yeah, I don't think there's a single cat. It's just, the thing is, too, it's like cats just don't have the same cachet for men as
dogs
do.
That's true. Yeah.
I love cats, so I've had my cat Andre for 17 years.
Let's see. We've got a time for a couple more. Next up from Tom in Hawaii. Do any of the Blazers use Axe body spray? I legitimately have no idea.
I don't think so, but I'll be on the lookout in the locker room to get you an answer for that. I would hope not. You think they could afford some of the nicer stuff. No offense to Axe body spray users.
Let's go ahead and end it there.
Yeah, it seems like a good place to stop.
Thanks, as always, for listening. Hopefully this turned out all right. Like I said, we kind of turned it around quickly and... had some distractions with all of the visitors that stopped by, including Chad Buchanan, whom we miss dearly, and it was nice to see, even if through glass. We'll bring you another podcast next week. We'll have more to talk about. We'll have at least two or three games. I think we're shooting for an off day maybe on Tuesday or Thursday, or maybe I've got my days mixed up, but we'll talk to you next week.
It's part of being on the road. You never know what day it is. Really. You know when the games are, and that's about it.
As always, he's Casey Holdall. I'm Joe Freeman. You can follow him on Twitter, at C. Hold. You can follow me on Twitter, at Blazer Freeman. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks again for listening. Watch Rasheed Wallace keep smashing the baseline. Go left, go right, 360 degrees. Here comes the paint, Kobe. Flipping and he's popping a three. Try and catch him coming down the court. Bonzi Wells, what a handle. It's amazing what he do for the sport. Damon Stoudemire saves the day. A.K.A. Mighty Mouse. Gonna show all of you scrubs how to play. What a show. Why the Lakers even want it with us, you know. No one's ready to deal with us.